I'd like to talk just a moment about what chancel drama is. And we didn't really get into that too much last time. Because I see chancel drama as being anything that is done in the way of a dramatic presentation as far as trying to portray a better image of what Jesus means to us. Anything that is used to help to clarify our faith, whether it is a presentation of a Bible story, whether it is, you know, interpretation of something, whether it is a discussion challenge, any of those types of things that help to bring the gospel a little more clearly into our minds. And so this, of course, covers a broad span and can include many, many aspects. Hi. It's okay. We'll have to ask you who you are.
Oh, Carol Sheever.
Oh, Carol, hi. I had lunch with you or something.
You had lunch with me, right. Yes, except I was too far away.
Yeah, I had trouble. I eyeballed you, but that was about it. What? How do you spell your last name again?
S-C-H-I-E-V-E-R.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Carol. All right, so that chancel drama, as I envision it, of course the term means it's done in the chancel, but I expand on that and just think of it in terms of anything that's done in the church or in any church-related activity that helps to bring us closer to Christ. And so that, you know, really covers quite a wide range of things. Okay, now from that point of view then, when we talk about working with chancel drama or drama with children, that can cover also a wide range of things that we can do. We can portray Bible stories, we can use participation stories, we can do many, many things. I think one of the things you need to ask yourself when you start talking about drama for children, are you talking about drama to be presented for children, or are you talking about drama in which children participate? I think there are two things, the two ways of looking at it. And as we go through different types of things that could be done, let's try to analyze a little bit, you know, whether this is for the children or it is something that the children are involved in that is being presented for someone else. And I think it makes a little difference in what you do. This past week, I was over at Narnia several times during the week. And the first time that I went over there, we did things that were both for and with the children. Because I went over there, I had one of the children come up and tell a story. And as the one older little boy told the story, we had several other children who acted it out. And as he would say a line, they would do what he said and acted it out. And the kids enjoyed that. They enjoyed watching it. They both participated, but then they also were appreciating and enjoying it themselves. When at the end of the week, I wanted to teach them a song in order to incorporate it into the Eucharist service last Sunday night, the little song that the children sang. There were 12 disciples. Now, this was actually, in a way, preparing for something in order to present it to someone else, in order that someone else enjoy it. I prefer to do things that the children can enjoy themselves, but also that can be presented to others, that others enjoy at the same time. But it's hard finding that nice balance that really makes it work well. The kids were enjoying the song at first, but when you pressure them, of course, to make a presentation with it, then it becomes more of a chore, and it becomes a point of doing it for someone else. And I think that's a hard point when you come to working with children. Okay, I have a number of things here I want to just sort of throw out as ideas, just to maybe create some you know, get the juices flowing as far as some ideas of things you can do. I have a participation story here that is really a lot of fun, and I'm going to ask you to kind of be a part of this, okay? This is called The Boyhood of Jesus, and it tells us just a little bit something about when Jesus was a child. I think we probably use this maybe for our rally day opening. And at our church, rally day openings are, you know, the opening at the, in the fall. They're not for the adults, they're for the children. A few adults will sit in, but it's primarily for the children and saying, hey, glad to have you back, and we enjoy your being here. Now, as apparently we had it set up here, we had the different groups who were assigned different roles in this story of the boyhood of Jesus. And the high school kids became the wolves, and they had an, oh, Carolyn, would you be a wolf for us, please? Let's hear you try.
Oh.
Very good. The nursery and kindergarten were the sheep, and they had a bah. Helen, could you be a sheep?
Bah.
Okay, seventh and eighth graders were donkeys, and they did the hee-haw, hee-haw. Carol.
Hee-haw,
hee-haw. Good job. Let's see, the adults who, apparently we had a few adults there, they were the wind in the barley, and that was, okay. The first and second graders were the turtle doves, and we'll let you be a turtle dove over here, and that's coo, coo. You like that? All right. And the roosters did the cock-a-doodle-doo. There you go, okay. Now, from the coolness of an April morning, the boy Jesus awoke and awaited the dawn. A rooster crowed from the yard. He was outlined by the first streaks of early light. Jesus rose softly and stepped gently from his house. He walked quietly so as not to disturb his sleeping parents and brothers and sisters. A low morning haze hovered over the village of Nazareth where he lived, and the surrounding countryside. The air was fresh and crisp, and in the yard, the rooster crowed again. Jesus stopped. He smiled at the perky red jungle fowl that was calling so noisily. He thought how dependable and clock-like was the crowing of the rooster. Another sound caught his attention. The family donkey brayed for attention. Jesus tiptoed to his side and patted him. Pat with me. The donkey was an important part of life in Nazareth. Villagers used their donkeys for riding, for pulling the plow, for turning millstones to grind grain. It was the most important animal of the Hebrew people in Jesus' time. Jesus was familiar with the ways of the donkey. As Jesus patted the animal, he thought, lost my place, of its endurance and persistence. The donkey brayed again softly. Jesus thought of the Hebrew laws protecting his donkey, how it had to be rested on the Sabbath day when everyone went to church, and how one that had fallen under the weight of its burden had to be helped. Years later, when Jesus would ride as a king into Jerusalem, it was not a chariot pulled by horses, but on the back of the animal of the common people, the lowly donkey. Now this would be on Palm Sunday, the week before Jesus would be crucified for our sins, and then rise again on Easter. Leaving the yard, Jesus walks faster. His footsteps leave the packed earth. Now if the children are standing, they could walk with you, but otherwise, you know. Leave the packed earth around the homes and head for the gently sloping hillsides that surround the nestling village of Nazareth. Suddenly, the sun burst above the hills, bathing in light the land of Jesus. Jesus is beside a barley field. Okay, you'd need a few more little hands there. The sun highlights the brilliant green of the field, etc., etc. So I'm going to jump down a little bit. Jesus listens to the soft breezes stirring the grain. helper, yeah. In later years, her hands aren't rough enough, she probably used them. In later years, Jesus was to feed a multitude of people with loaves of the same barley grain. Remember later that Jesus also fed 5,000 people with a few loaves of bread and some fish. But now, unmindful of his future, he is content to look and listen. A cooing caught his attention. He strained for sight of the bird amidst the swaying grain. Then he saw it, the small yellowish-gray turtle dove, causing the whole landscape to reverberate with its soft, plaintive cooing. April, the northern hill country at its loveliest, and the etc. Okay, some of you are not, it goes on too long, but anyway, the children participate, and that is a fun thing, you know. It doesn't require any planning, and the children do it in groups so that when one forgets, there's usually some other little smarty that will remember to get his act in there and get everybody going. So it becomes a fun thing and a way of telling a story so that it is not long and boring, and it keeps them active, keeps them attentive because they're always waiting for their word, and helps to create just a fun situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will. All right. What am I doing tomorrow? Yes. What I'll do on Friday will be my freebie day. Okay? And I'll pass out all the free. Is everybody going to be here through Friday? No. When are you leaving? You're leaving on Friday? Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll try to make freebie day on Thursday. Will you be here Thursday?
Yeah,
Carol? No.
I'm leaving Thursday.
You're leaving Thursday? How about Wednesday for freebie day? That's tomorrow. Well, anyway, I'll see that those of you who need to get it earlier will get materials earlier. But then tomorrow I'll definitely plan to give information on where some of this can be obtained. All right? Okay. Here's another one that is a lot of fun for the children, and this is one we did last week with the kids over at Narnia, is telling the story. Again, here's something that they can pantomime with you. They really need to stand up for this one, and they really got into this one. It's the story of Palm Sunday. I was a child. Why don't we all stand? Just to participate, just to get the feeling in.
You usually do this Palm Sunday, right? Could be done
on the next. Well, this is a story about Palm Sunday. We did it last week, you know. I mean, you could do it when you want to, as long as the kids understand that this leads up to the story of the crucifixion. Kids accept these sort of stories any time. But it does relate, you know, if you'd have it. This is also a fun one that can be done as a group, and the children will still enjoy it if you need to have to do a little something for Palm Sunday. And the children will enjoy doing it, at the same time they will enjoy presenting it. So it's both a with and for type thing. Okay. I was a child on Jesus' day. One day I put on my sandals and put on my robe, and I hurried to the city gate. You have to see that they stay in place. Okay? I was very happy and excited. I called my friends to join me and told them that Jesus was coming this way. Jesus is coming this way. Jesus is coming this way. Jesus is coming this way. We walked on together. Some of my friends were already there. We looked to see if he was coming. But we saw nothing. It was hard for us to wait. Then we saw a tiny figure in the distance. That way. Could it be Jesus? We left our parents and ran ahead. Yes, it was Jesus. and he was coming our way. He was riding on a donkey, and his disciples walked behind him. Would they be angry? Would they be angry to see the children? No. He's smiling. Come on. Stop. Let's get some branches from the tree and wave them like they do for kings and warriors. Can you reach them? Here, I have mine. Do you? I'm going to get some dates, too, for the donkey. Jesus is just coming over the Mount of Olives. Let's wave our branches. Hooray! Hosanna, Hosanna! Shout Hosanna, Hosanna! Hosanna in the heavens! Hosanna in the heavens! Blessings on him who comes in the name of the Lord! Blessings on him who comes in the name of the Lord! Look at the donkey. He's so slow we can run along beside him. Let's reach out and pat him. Here. Here, want a date? Jesus is smiling at us. Jesus looks so strong and sure. But he looks a little sad, too. We're heading down the path past Gethsemane now. Now we're going across the Valley of Kidron. And here come our parents. They are just catching up. They're cheering too. Let's join them. Look. My father is throwing down his cloak in front of the donkey. I want to too. Hey, wait for me. We're going through St. Stephen's Gate into the walled city of Jerusalem now. I'm terrible at snapping. Those are the cobblestones. The kids ask, what is that? I said, cobblestone. The crowd is too big now. I can't see. They're all shouting so loud. We're being pushed to the back. Look, Jesus is turning around and waving goodbye to us. Goodbye, Jesus, goodbye. Goodbye, Jesus, goodbye. Ride on, O King, in majesty. Ride on, O King, in majesty. Everybody sit down. Okay, now that worked out really super. What happened is the kids near the end got really excited, real agitated, you know, especially as Jesus was coming and they're picking the dates and waving their things, and you know, they were getting really kind of hyper. Almost kind of wild. And then at the very end, I said, okay, everybody sit down. And then we talked about how we would feel if Jesus really did come in on a donkey like that, you know, and how excited we'd get. And we'd probably even get kind of wild, like some of the kids got, you know. And they, yeah, you know, they all agreed with that. And then, you know, then we talked about, they said that Jesus looked kind of sad. Why was that? And they came through with, well, he was going to go and be, you know, killed on the cross. And they, you know, they came up with the story, and it makes a good discussion starter then to help them understand, you know, this is the excitement that came at the beginning, and what does that lead up to? Jesus' crucifixion. But then, did it stay sad? Was it always sad? You know, then you lead into, no, the resurrection. Okay, so it's a good discussion starter. No, I just read it. It didn't need, you know, you don't have to have it memorized or anything like that. A couple times when they were getting kind of hyper, if you notice that one, a couple times they said, stop, let's listen, or something like that. And I used a few extra stops just in order to get those, you know, get them to stop the running or whatever it was that they were doing as they got a little hyper. So I threw in a few of those just to, you know, to temper it down. So that worked out. So that, you know, that's the type of thing that you can do that is possible. Just for a change of pace before we get into Christmas, materials here. Here's another thing that I have found to be very good. Now, this is for children, for the enjoyment of children. And this is also good, like, for Sunday school openings and closings, or something when you want to have a little entertainment for children at a fellowship affair or anything like that. And that is puppet shows. These puppet shows, now, we started doing puppet shows one time with one of the ladies from the Ladies Guild, who is quite a proper lady, had written a puppet show in order to explain for the Ladies Guild what Advent was. And she had written this, and she wondered if some of the teenagers would put this together. And they had made puppets. So we had these four little puppets, and they were Hermie and Gertie and Sally and George. Now, Hermie and Gertie are real space cadets. They are just, you know, really always confused by things. Sally and George know what's going on. You know, they always know what's happening, and they're together. All right. So, but anyway, it started out with this for the Ladies Guild, and they had made the four puppets, and they had made a box with one little window in it, which they had thought in terms of using for the for all four puppets, but it ended up being too small. Anyway, so we had the teenagers do this thing for Advent, and then they did it for the children for Sunday school, and the kids just loved it. Well, after that, started a whole stream of Herbie and Gertie stories. And this lady wrote quite a few more, and I wrote a few of them, and some of the high school kids started writing. So we've got Hermie and Gertie stories that, you know, whenever we needed a Hermie and Gertie, we quick threw them together, and they don't take a lot of time. They're just very, very fun. Hermie and Gertie at this point are very raggedy. They are really kind of falling apart and everything, but they are old friends. You know, all we have to do is pop up Hermie and Gertie, and that's great. You know, we repair Gertie's hair every once in a while because it's all falling. But it doesn't really matter what Gertie looks like, or, you know, whether she's falling apart or not. The box is getting raggedy. We need to make a new one. But what we generally have done with that is we set the box. If we have opening in church, you know, I'm thinking in terms of opening in church, and that doesn't have to be. We've done them, you know, in the church basement or any place. If we do them like for Sunday school openings, and that's where we've used them the most. By Sunday school openings, I mean, not in the fall, not rally day, but, you know, any time when you have a Sunday school day. We have a railing around, and we put a tablecloth over the railing. So the high school kids do Hermie and Gertie, and they will just lie down behind the table, you know, the railing and the tablecloth. And then one person goes in the box. So one of the characters is always in the house. And it just creates variety rather than have them all in a straight line. There's always one that talks from the box from the house. And so I have a few Hermie and Gerties here. I don't have many copies of them, so I have to use the ones for which we have several copies. Here's one on Valentine's Day. We have two copies, so we're going to have to read this together. Remember, let's see, would you be Hermie, and you'd be Gertie, and you'd be George himself. Try to visualize this. Yes, they each have a script and you've done on the floor. You do have to practice this. You can't, but it takes minimal practice because the words are often not fun. But there are several things that they do because if the kids are doing the puppet and reading at the same time, you tend to let the puppet drop. And pretty soon, the puppet has to sit down and not on the floor. So you always have to train them to hold their hand backwards with the puppet, depending on what type of puppet you're using. I think maybe you could get the teenagers here to make paper bag puppets and then do it for 9 couples. There's nothing to put together as long as it's good. Anyway, you have to train to keep them up
and then to look at each other at who's talking. And then the puppet that is talking always has the movement. That way they can tell, you know. And so you have to make sure that the puppeteer, when he's talking, he's also moving his feet, you know. And the puppets can cry. You know. They don't do too much. So even if they just keep them in action, that's pretty good. They do have to project their voices. They can't mumble behind the tablecloth there. They have to speak clearly and distinctly. So that's what gentle traction is. Holding their hands up, keeping the motion going when they need to, and speaking clearly and distinctly, and paying attention to who's talking.
So they can't use microphones. They have one hand in the cup and the other probably in the
script. I am not partial to microphones. I only use microphones as a last resort. Partly because I've never had them readily available, but partly because I think it inhibits the people that are doing it. I'd rather teach them to project their voices and do a good job of that. And then that's always useful. Okay. All right, let's just hear from you.
Wow! I sure...
Pardon me, this is Valentine's Day. This is Valentine's Day in Sunday school. I'm sorry, I'm ruining your purpose.
Try to love everybody.
Even girls? I like all my friends and Gertie too, but do I have to love them?
Does that mean we're supposed to marry each other like Mom and Dad?
Yuck. I don't want to get married. I want to be a fireman.
Don't be silly. Jesus didn't mean you had to marry everyone. That's impossible.
You're confusing different kinds of love. Christian love isn't marrying. It's being kind, honest, and...
And not calling Gertie names.
Right. There are lots of kinds of love. Love for your pets, love for your parents, and romantic love. But most important is Christian love.
That means that we should love everybody like Jesus loves us, doesn't it?
And try to treat them the way we like to be treated.
Now you're catching on.
Gosh. I'm sorry, girl. I was only kidding. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
That's okay, Hermie.
Now, doesn't that feel better than yelling at each other?
It sure does. You see, with God's love, every day is Valentine's. Now let's go over to my house. My mom just baked some heart-shaped cookies.
I remember your cookies. All right. We've even used them kind of as a commercial endeavor. And maybe Susanna would like to show us her accomplishment here before we go on. You want to hold it up, Susanna, so everybody can see? Oh, beautiful kite.
Oh,
beautiful.
Shiny sun.
Okay, thank you. That's gorgeous. I've never seen such magnificent kites. I didn't know they made them like that. We've used them, too, as kind of a commercial thing. Like, for example, this one talks about, I'm not going to read through it, but it talks about, we had a summer Sunday school. We experimented with summer Sunday school and tried something new. And so the story with Hermie and Gertie and George and Sally is that Hermie and Gertie, of course, are all set for vacation in the summer, and they can't figure out why George and Sally are all dressed up and going to church, you know, because here it's Sunday school and there's vacation, and then they're telling them about all the excitement that's going to happen and, you know, all that sort of thing. So it helps the kids to understand what's going on in this, you know, for a certain thing. Or we have ones on, here are some of the topics we have for Hermie and Gertie. The meaning of Lent, summer Sunday school, Halloween or Reformation Day, and that combines the idea of Halloween and Reformation Day, and Hermie and Gertie have a pumpkin, you know, and we use minimum props, you know, like the Valentine that they're arguing about. The meaning of Advent, Rally Day, New Beginning, things like that. And I have only one with me that's really general, and that's one on the feeding of the 5,000, which might be the one that would be fun if the teenagers would be interested. So anyway, that's something that is fun for the kids. It's enjoyed by the kids, and the teenagers enjoy doing it. It's not a big thing. You know, it doesn't take a lot of their time to prepare it. We can, if they're going to do it next Sunday, we can prepare it on Sunday morning. We have an hour and 15 minutes Sunday school, and so we'll take maybe 10, 15 minutes to run through Hermie and Gertie, whoever's going to do it. Now, we have a strange bunch of kids at our church. They have adopted Hermie and Gertie, and whoever has Hermie and Gertie, now if you get the part of Hermie, you keep it until you graduate, and they will not give up Hermie or Gertie or Sally or George until they graduate. And then those puppets get bequeathed to somebody else. But unless they're not going to be there, you know, then somebody else gets it. But they're very protective, and it's almost like, well, you know, I've been Hermie. I'm Hermie, you know. You can't take Hermie away from me until I leave. Then Hermie can go to somebody else. And, of course, at this point, you know, you have to be a junior or senior before you get to be Hermie. You know? And, of course, some of those kids will sometimes abdicate because they get too big to get down behind the altar railing. It gets a little crowded back there as the kids get bigger.
Can you use the pulpit?
Well, you use your own poor judgment, you know.
You don't feel strongly about that, do you?
No. You judge how it looks to you, because each church is different, and there are big variations. You have to conceptualize what it looks like in your church or in your youth hall or wherever it is that, you know, such you might present something like that, and make use of what's available. Our church hall was in an overflow area behind the church pews, and one time we did it for a dinner, and the kids just knelt behind the pews and did it right off the back of the pews like this, and put the box between the pews. They moved one of the pews up and did it this way. That was very uncomfortable for them. They had a hard time doing it, but, you know, just anything will work. Just put it together. You know, don't worry so much about how it's put together. Just do it. All right, moving right along. We want to talk about Christmas programs a little bit. And I have two here that were really excellent programs, which I enjoyed doing very much. I don't know, they are fairly long projects and depend on how stable a children's group you have. Both of these were done with a parochial school group. Any of you involved in parochial schools? Just one of you? Okay. It's helpful if you have a parochial school, because that gives you a sort of a solid basis on which you can pretty well base your rehearsals. In other words, after school you can have practices or something like that. This one was called The No Room in the Inn Group. This was the story of Mary and Joseph. It was the story of a boy and a girl who had volunteered to play Mary and Joseph in an outdoor manger scene. And they stand there in the outdoor manger scene, and people come by to see this outdoor scene. Well, of course, they're out in the freezing cold, it's getting colder and colder, and they're standing there, and there's a party going on tonight, and as soon as they get done with being Mary and Joseph, they are free to go to the party, you know. But meanwhile, they're freezing, and all these people are coming by, and they have to stand very, very still and portray Mary and Joseph, and the doll is in the manger. And so people come by, and then they have the in-between conversations between Mary and Joseph when nobody is there, then they have all these little aside things that they say. There's an elderly couple that come by, and they act almost like the boy and the girl are not alive. They talk about them and they say, oh, doesn't she look like the Smith girl and all that sort of thing. And when they leave, they feel obliged, like, well, we should leave some money or something. And so they leave a dollar bill at the manger. And then there's a group of carolers who come by and they sing. And then there's a little girl that keeps coming by. And she wants to come in and play with the doll, and they keep telling her, scram kid, get out of here, and she keeps coming back. And then there is a drunk who comes, and he's kind of staggering around, an old man who is drunk. And he's kind of staggering around there, and they're, you know, really very nervous about that. They don't like him being there. And the whole thing is set up, by the way, our school principal wrote it, we divided it into acts as the different people visited. We separated it so that the children from the various classroom groups made presentations in between. And then we had the Christmas story readings sort of were interspersed in between the different scenes. So it was sort of divided up, which worked out, and that worked out quite nicely. What happens at the end of the story? It's kind of an interesting ending, because the boy and the girl, the girl keeps worrying, particularly keeps worrying about the little girl who keeps coming back and coming back. And they keep telling her, kid, go home, where do you live, where do you live? And she just keeps coming back. And then when Mary and Joseph finally leave then to go to the party, the girl is still kind of worried that this little girl might come back again. And then the last scene is in the morning, and it opens up, and the man who was drunk and the little girl are huddled together, frozen to death. I mean, this sounds really very sad, but it's handled very carefully in the play. They're found in the manger scene on the hay. And let's see. It's morning, and two men come by. Hey, in there, wake up, buddy, wake up. Come on, get up. Hey, anybody, help, help. What's the matter? I just found this man, the little girl like this. Are they dead? I'm afraid so, frozen. Nobody could have lived out here as cold as it was last night. Oh my God, help us. Apparently the old guy has given the little girl his jacket, but it didn't help much. Strange thing, there was a coat on that baby. That doll, maybe the little one had put it around it. What are they doing out here all night? All we know is they're both dead on Christmas Day. And the curtain ends, that's the end. The director comes out and he says, thank you for coming tonight, friends. Shall we stand for the benediction? And a man gets up in the audience. Wait a minute. You don't mean to tell me the play ends there. Why, yes. Well, you can't have a Christmas play end like that. Who ever heard of a Christmas play with a sad ending? Well, it seems like I once heard a story about a sweet baby born on Christmas Day who died some years later hanging on the cross. And that's no happy ending. Well, that's different. I mean, you get a bunch of school kids out here to put on a tragedy the day before Christmas. We need something happy and joyous. That is, this is, as the drunk in the play said, the season to be jolly. We didn't come out here to see something sad, et cetera, et cetera. Well, not exactly. It just seems like the ending you used wasn't very realistic. Like I say, Christmas plays are supposed to have a happy ending. Is that so? Well, just look around you for a moment. This very minute, the day before Christmas, millions of babies are crying because they haven't had enough food to fill their tummies. Millions of them. People are treated cruelly in this nation. We have prejudice of some sort in our heart, I do in mine. We don't really love our neighbor as much as we pretend we do. We don't even know our neighbor, especially if he's different from us. There's hatred everywhere. I'm running this very fast. We all have our own in-groups that keep others out. And you want a happy ending tonight? Well, I see what you mean, but couldn't we see another side just for this time of year? Isn't there something to be happy about? There is. But it's time we thought about something besides a gentle baby Jesus lying in a little pile of hay, not offending anyone. Baby Jesus and Santa Claus aren't the same, you know. And it's about time we let baby Jesus grow up and challenge us with some ideas so radical and earth-shaking that they caused him to suffer death on a cross. So what about the ending of the play? No happy conclusion? Sure. This same Jesus didn't come to earth to lie in a manger all his days. The happy conclusion is the life of Jesus. He became a man. He lived and died for us. He came so that everyone who believes in him should not be lost but have a meaningful life. To me, that's pretty happy. That's really good news. Yeah. That's fairly easy to produce. You know, it could be used very well for teenagers rather than for smaller children. But with the interspersion of the children's groups, it made it quite usable. Okay, there's another one here, and I won't get into that a lot. It's called One Clear Star that I really enjoyed. And it's the story of a Scrooge-type person who is really angry about Christmas. He hates it. You know, they're singing the carols and shut up and all this stuff. And then one by one, people start arriving at his door. And what it amounts to is that all of the people who were involved in the story of the first Christmas, they're having a reunion. And the reunion happens to be right there where his house is. And so we have all these different individuals who are involved. You know, the shepherds come, and they knock on his door, and they say, you know, they keep asking, is this the place? And he's going crazy because all these people keep coming to his door. And then the wise men arrive, and he looks out the window, and here are camels out the door. And Star of Bethlehem arrives and asks if she can borrow a ladder. She needs to get on his roof, and at the very end, then they all see Jesus is starting to come for the big reunion, and they rush out to meet him. And as this all happens, well, then you hear the carolers again, and he thinks, "Oh my gosh, was this a dream or what? What is happening to me?" But anyway, as the carolers start to leave, he runs out and says, "Wait for me! Wait for me!" And we did this with grade school kids, and they did an excellent job. We just had a fantastic little ragamuffin for the Scrooge-like person, and he was nothing but trouble in school, but he was just a dream for doing something like this, and enjoyed it very much. But there's a lot of work to that, and if you get into that, you have to be a person who's very well organized, and in order to make it come out. We set up a schedule and worked on individual parts, you know, so that we kind of subdivided it, and those who needed to practice different parts had to be there different days, and they all knew ahead when they had to be at practice, and you had to be very careful and precise and very demanding that they be there, and that is one thing that is difficult to do.
Could you say a little bit about setting up? I know I was admiring your production calendar. Can you say a little bit or something about setting up a production calendar like that? I mean, how where you begin with that?
All right. The first day that I meet with them is I meet with everybody. Okay. According to this calendar, the first day I met with everybody, and I had only one other time until the final that we met with everybody. The first time is just so that everybody knows the story. So you read through the whole thing. Then they know the story. Then I subdivided it according to the different things that were happening. In other words,
all the shepherds arrive at once, you know, and then they have to interact with, and the little Scrooge-like character, of course, had to be there every time. And then, you know, you had the Star of Bethlehem with the little Scrooge character, and maybe there was another little scene of another small group that met. And then that's when the shepherds arrived, and then their interaction. And that. So those were each set on separate days where they could practice individually, and then they're not sitting around waiting for somebody else to practice and not having anything to do. And it saves some of the confusion that you have of kids running around when they're not working. And that worked out really very well. And then finally, the last week, you sort of put it together. I had someone else on this one. I apparently had somebody else working with me so that we were able to divide it and then put it all together at the end. And make it flow.
Did you meet after school?
We met after school, yeah. 3:15 to 4:30, 3:15 to 4:15. Here's a Saturdays, 11 to 12:30. Two Saturdays. But the rest of them were, when we had everybody, then it was 3:15 to 5. Okay. I really know that I don't begin to touch on everything that's possible, but maybe just by going through a few of these things, it helps to excite you a little bit about things that can be done. You know what's generally available. And sometimes some of those, you know, the nice Christmas, I'm not opposed to some of the canned Christmas programs, and some of them are really very well organized and they go very smoothly. A few suggestions that I can make, I've seen different things happen. To just use your imagination and do something different for Christmas if you don't want to use the regular Christmas program. This last year we took our Sunday school superintendent set out tables. We have movable chairs in the church. And we set out tables for each of the class groups and invited the parents to join with the children, and they each had one a hand project of some kind that they did. Many of them were like ornaments to be put on the Christmas tree. And so they spent about 15 minutes at the beginning working on these and then had various presentations. The high school group this year, I remember that because I worked with the high school kids, but we did, at the beginning of the service, the kids all carried out huge boxes like this, all wrapped in Christmas paper. I had a box party over at my house one day to wrap boxes, and the kids all just came over and wrapped boxes. And we set these boxes on either side towards the back, you know, so that they kind of made a backdrop anyway. And they sat there all through, you know, the Christmas service while the children did various things. Some of them made, one group made bells, and then they did a recitation about the bells or a song or something, and things like that. And then at the end, the teenagers opened up their boxes, and are you going to leave?
You have to. I've got to leave.
Okay, I'm fine. I want to do one thing yet quickly. Anyway, they opened up the boxes, and in the boxes, one had a manger in it, had the manger, and they set out the manger, and the rest of them had clothing, and they quick whipped on the outfits, and they became Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds, etc. You know, it was just a very quick motion type thing that they could do. It was, you know, nothing that had to be worked on. You know, they could whip it on, and they stood there, and then they formed the backdrop for the singing of Silent Night at the end. And so just try to use creative ideas. You know, there are other things that can be done than the routine Christmas programs. And do some brainstorming on some of that. You'll find the people in the congregation who work with kids have lots of great ideas if they're just encouraged to bring them out. Okay. The reason I'm wanting you to wait a minute here is tomorrow and Thursday I want to work on this dare drama, which we're going to do, and for our worship Thursday night. And I think you'll find it very easy to do. Let's see. There are four rolls that, there are eight rolls. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. You won't be there. Okay. Who would like a speaking role? There aren't a lot. There isn't a lot to learn.
I
Okay. All right. Who will be here tomorrow and who will be here Thursday night? Raise your hands.
I will.
I'm going on a hike tomorrow. I'm not sure if I'll be back. But.
Okay. All right. 1, 2, 3. You don't want to speak?
Well, you know, I will feel uncomfortable with a very big part.
No, none of them are very big parts, and I'll do the storytelling so that I'll stop that. Okay, four. All right, who did I say?
I'll be here, but I don't want to memorize anything if I don't
have
to.
Oh, yeah, all right, you got more. All right, then you'll be one of the answer. All right. Number one. You're number one. 2, 3, 4. All right? And the rest of you, even though you're not going to be here, you'll be the outside part, people, okay? Remember your numbers, you four, all right?
Is it very hard? Is it?
No, it's not. It's not very hard at all.
It's more than three lines.
All right, we'll try it. If you don't like it, we'll switch it. All right? Let's just read it. All right, now get a picture. You may have to share a couple of these.
Here, there's more.
Yeah. All right. Get a picture of this. What it's going to be, there's going to be a circle in the center. This will be moved back. There's going to be numbers 1, 2, 3, 4 are joined hands in a circle in the center. And they're going to be moving around a lot, like this, and talking. Now, the persons who are 5, 6, 7, and 8, the other 8 people, are facing. They're on the outside of this circle. They have their hands extended, but not touching. And they're facing in, watching the inner circle. And the outside circle spends most of the time just standing there very glumly, watching the inner circle. This talks about using mass, but I'm not going to use mass, I don't think. The storyteller starts. I'll spin you a yarn in circle form, 2 circles to be exact. Anyway, since our time is tight here, I'm going to skip that. But anyway, what I do is then I tell the story and I form the circles, okay? All right? 2 different circles. 2 different circles they were. I'm halfway down. Though one lived within the other, the 2 circles never touched. And those on the outside of the inner circle looked in and wondered what it was that put a smile on the face of the inner circle's residents, and why it was that they had not been chosen to share the smile and spin with joy. Those, however, who had been graced with the smile of the inner circle were so dazzled by their own giftedness that they never noticed the circle outside of them. It was their boundary and their setting, their context. It set limits on how large their circle might ever hope to become. Through the broken circle outside of them included people who stood alone and longed for more than a circle that failed to look like a circle at all. The inner circle was in a world all its own. Number one.
We need to talk.
You're supposed to spin.
There are times when we need to talk. Spinning makes talk difficult.
What is it you need to talk about?
I say, wait a minute.
I'm sorry.
I was wondering, I'm 2, right?
Okay. Oh, all right.
There are times when we need to talk. Spinning makes talk difficult.
What is it you need to talk about?
We pause regularly for a bit of liturgy.
Liturgy?
Yes, and we understand it, a verbal incantation celebrating our circle moves now and then in order at least once a week.
Very well, proceed.
Chosen.
We are chosen.
Special.
Oh yes, we are special.
Pure.
Pure circle.
We praise the maker of circles for making us.
And keeping us together forever.
And so, yeah, that's it. So 1, 2, 3, and 4 begin to spin to the right again. Now, by spinning, we mean just circling, okay? Storyteller. And so it went with life in the inner circle. Always the celebration, always the faithful motion of being gifted. This might have gone on forever had the day not come when this circle suddenly stop spinning. Some say it was a cry heard in the distance that made the circle stop. Others say it was the maker of circles moving the inner circle to horizons it had not yet known. Whatever the cause, the circle stopped and a new liturgy was spoken among its members.
I think we're being watched.
Not. Who is watching us? It's a very circle and nothing more.
Are you sure?
I tell you, we're being watched.
Now.
What in the world?
What is it?
Turn around. Take a look for yourself.
No, thank you. Tell us what you see.
Spin.
Why?
Spin, I tell you. Spin.
Okay, so the circle spins with only three looking out. And three notices the other members.
Another circle. It's another circle.
Like ours?
No. Different. Very different. The circle is disjointed. It doesn't smile, and it doesn't spin.
I don't believe it. We're the only circle the maker of circles has made.
Turn around. Turn around, I said.
It's true. I see it. Another circle.
The rest of you, turn around. Will you?
Good children.
Wait, stop this spinning. It's getting us nowhere.
We are the only circle the makers are one that made.
Turn around and you'll think differently.
No, thank you. Tell us what you see.
I see lonely eyes and a face that does not smile.
I see hands not joined and people who do not know that circles are for spinning in a dance of endless joy.
Okay, now, would you read 5, 6, 7, and I'll read 8.
I am alone. I am forgotten.
Who is my friend?
Where will this end?
Listen, tell us that it is not for real.
Hungry for bread.
Hungry for touch.
Hungry for yes.
Hungry for care.
They are not of our circle. They are not addicted people. It is there that we do not know them.
Turn around. I said, turn around. They would not be there if the maker of circles had not put them there. Turn around and do it now. Or this circle of ours will never spin again.
So then one, four turn, and the circle begins once more to spin round and round, stopping finally so that each person in the inner circle faces a person in the outer circle. And I think that you would each give the other person a hug at this point, okay? And the storyteller goes on. It was then that the members of the inner circle discovered a world bigger than their own. And in their meeting of one broken circle after another, they began to learn the depth of the creativity and challenge of the maker of circles. They would not turn their backs again on those outside their circle. And at this point, then they embrace and they begin spinning all together, only this time not facing inside, but facing outside so that they can look for other circles. Okay? Instead, they would teach the art of circle spinning and the simple joys of joined hands and rich, broad smiles. To this day, their circle spins happier, freer, and to the heartbeat of its maker, stopping only for the new rich liturgy of risk and discovery.